This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the 10th episode of the MH podcast, where it's been quite a controversial podcast. For the time, what we've been doing, for those who don't know about the MH podcast, we've been bringing Muslim academics on, we've been bringing different people on, but now we wanted to kind of expand the range a little bit and bring an interesting guest. Aliyah, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. So Aliyah, as far as we know from looking at your social media, your Twitter and other accounts, you're transgender. You identify as a transgender
woman, yes.
Yeah, so can you just tell us about your story? Like, what happened growing up? When did you make this decision? Was it a decision to be made in the first place?
Mm-hmm. So for me, I had a quite strange journey. I always knew, like in the back of my mind, I always knew that I was trans and that I wanted to transition, but I was dealing with a lot of internalized transphobia while I was growing up. And I was like, whenever I would have those thoughts, I'd be like, oh, fuck that, I'm not a tranny. What, can I cuss?
Pardon?
Can I cuss?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You can be as free as you want to be. No one's restricting you here.
Okay. So when I had those thoughts that, like, when I was really young and I would have these, like, you know, like, basically being intrigued by trans people when I saw them on the media. And I always just thought that I was interested by them because in the back of my mind, I was like, I can't be a tranny. Like, that's disgusting. No, that's not me. But eventually I started to realize that that is in fact me. And there's only so far I can go with denying that truth. So I decided to come out as trans a little over a year ago. Yeah, sorry, that was a little vague.
So how old are you now? And when did you start getting these first thoughts about being transgender?
So when right now I'm 17. When I was really little, I always had a fascination towards feminine objects, female toys. Like, I always wanted to play with the dolls. I'm sure you've probably heard a lot of people say like that. I always wanted to play with the dolls. I didn't want to play with the trucks. But seeing the culture that was around me and the family that I come from, I knew that that wasn't right. And so I suppressed those feelings. So this was around like kindergarten. And I remember when I was in third grade, I wanted to grow my hair out like the girls that are in the Pantene commercial. And
I've been doing that recently as well, as you can see.
Yeah, and I saw these women in the commercial and they were so like elegant and they were so like, they were the epitome of femininity to me. And to me, that's what I wanted to, like, that's who I was. Like, I was like, wait, I don't want to fade. I don't want, like, you know, to look masculine, look like a man. Like, this is the direction that I'm leaning. And so I told my parents that I wanted to grow my hair out to donate to cancer. In reality, I just wanted to have, you know, luscious locks. And yeah, that was another time frame where I was like, okay, there's something's a little bit off about me.
Can I ask you a personal question? I obviously don't have to answer this, but yes. In terms of sexuality, would you identify, or let me ask you a two-part question. When you were mm-hmm. growing up, were you attracted to men or women?
When I was and growing
still,
up,
do you still feel the same way?
Yes, I was attracted to men growing up, and I always thought that I was just a gay man, and that I could wrap my head around, you know, like, accepting that I'm gay, I could wrap my head around, but I couldn't wrap my head around and accepting the fact that I'm trans. But that happened a bit afterwards.
So in terms of then, like, let's say, for example, in your early teens, for the sake of argument, because you're still growing up and still making kind of thinking about things, I'm guessing, mm-hmm. when you're growing up and you decided that you were attracted to men, Did you at any point identify?
I didn't yeah. decide. It was yeah. a very, it was just there. Like,
right.
And it was something that I was battling with. It was a whole nother battle in itself because I didn't want to be gay.
Right. So when you felt homosexual urges or whatever it may be, growing up, did you ever identify as a homosexual? At least yes. yourself?
Yes.
So now post, let's say, transformation, or this, now that you've decided to be trans, do you consider yourself homosexual, or do you consider yourself straight?
I consider myself a heterosexual woman.
Right. So your sexuality has changed.
I wouldn't say the sexuality change. I would say the label to the sexuality change, because homosexual means a man that is attracted to a man, but I'm no longer a man.
That's quite interesting, because a lot of people, this is kind of a sticking point for a lot of people. So a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm born gay and there's no yeah. way of changing that. But so on your model, in a sense, you can change it. If you change your gender, you change your sexuality as well.
Well, I wanted to go back to when you said, when I decided to be trans, it wasn't like, it's not that I like changed something. It was more of discovering the fact that I'm trans.
Now, can I ask you a question? In terms of like conceptions, feminist conceptions of masculinity and femininity, I'm sure you've been exposed to them. Recently, there's been a shift in third wave feminism to kind of conceiving not only gender, but also sexuality as social constructs. Mm-hmm. To what extent do you agree with the fact that actually gender is not something which is biologically determined, but is in fact a social construct?
So I have, I guess, kind of an unpopular opinion of when it comes throughout my peers. I do think that there are social roles in placed on each gender.
Right.
But I also do believe that gender is innate. Like there have been there's a study that showed that trans women have a really similar brain structure to cisgender women compared to a man. And I was doing a lot of research on this topic, and I found out that your feminine and masculine qualities are actually innate. Like they're in your mind, like they're wired in your brain. So, and also where through you know how I follow Islam prescribes certain roles for certain genders. And I think I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that when it's applied, when gender roles are applied toxically to people who don't want to conform to them, that's when I think it becomes more of a societal pressure.
Okay, yeah. So just to go back to this question, and we'll talk about the religious element maybe a little bit later on in this discussion, but going back to the social construct, right? So because just looking at the literature myself, I've written a book called Fifth Wave Feminism. And I was exposed to a lot of, which really was a combination of essays that I was kind of looking into. And that's why I'm interested in this topic. What seems to come out in terms of the literature, especially with Judith Butler and third wave feminists like this, and also in trans theory, like a queer theory, right? Queer theory in general, it seems to be more that it's a social construct. So for example, me looking at someone like Judith Butler, going back to her, she seems to insinuate that sex is a social, not just gender, but sex is a social construct as well. To what extent would you agree with someone like Judith Butler that sex is a social construct?
So there are, what's it called? So sex is defined by your biological characteristics, your chromosome, and there was one other thing that I'm forgetting. But I think that, I think it's kind of a little bit of both. I see the argument on that sex is, like, for example, for me, I wouldn't consider my sex as a female. I wouldn't consider that as a social construct because this is right. how my brain was born. I was born feminine. I was, you know, like that's how my brain is wired. So in that aspect, I wouldn't consider it a social construct. But when you start looking at what society expects of certain genders, and you compare and you fit that into the definition of sex when you look at their characteristics. So there might be characteristics in this society that are that are feminine in this society and masculine in this society. So I think in that aspect, it's social. So like, to be honest, kind of in them both.
I understand what you're saying, but so you seem to be veering, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you seem to be veering more in the direction of that there is a large degree of this, which depends on biology. So you've mentioned chromosomes, you've mentioned maybe anatomy is what you're trying to allude to, right? Brain structure you mentioned, right? So, so if it is in that direction, and so you don't subscribe to, let's say, mainstream third wave feminist or queer theory conceptions, is that fair enough?
To be honest, I don't know. I am, you know, a 17-year-old girl trying to figure where my opinions lie.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of, there's like this conversation in the trans community that says that you don't need gender dysphoria in order to be trans. And my first instinct is to disagree with that. Because why would you be transitioning if you don't feel the distress, you know? Like that, I feel like gender dysphoria validates trans people on a scientific scale, but I see what a lot of I am no one to decide who is supposedly trans or not, but I've heard from other people that are trans who don't feel dysphoria and still claim to be trans, and I hear their argument, and I'm really in the process of trying to figure out where my opinion lies there. But like, as of now, I don't subscribe to that ideology, like that third wave, whatever you're saying. Like there's a lot of mainstream ideas in the trans community where I'm not, I don't want to say I don't believe, but I'm just not sure where I lie.
I understand what you're saying, but here's why it's important to get this right. Because so the people on that kind of side of the argument would say, actually, gender and or sex is a social construct, yeah? So this is really a postmodern idea. It's something called postmodernism, where the biological element is almost completely kind of sidelined, if you like. You know, it's trivialized, if you minimized. So the idea of biology is not a staple part or the major point of gender identification. This is really their argument. So,
and I think that when it, like, it depends on where you see what your perception of biology is. If you're just talking about just chromosomes, and I have XY chromosomes, and if you think that just because of that my sex is male, I wouldn't, you know, agree with that, because there are plenty of intersex people who have X and Y chromosomes, who have variations of so, but that doesn't make their gender identity any less valid.
Right. But this is what I'm saying. Where does validity, what is the scientific approach of identification? Because if we do take a hardline biological approach, once someone can say, well, the buck stops at where the chromosome, what the chromosomes are. Like, so if it's an XY, then that is male. We will identify that as male. If it's XX, we'll identify that individual as female. And so if we do take this kind of, we're looking at the testosterone balances or imbalances, ovaries, looking at the womb, or the existence or non-existence of, and or a culmination of all of those, you know, anatomical features. And then one says at the end of it, well, with all of these anatomical features together, we determine male and female. And so the question is now, couldn't someone accuse you of picking and choosing in the sense that, okay, you've identified yourself as having XY chromosomes, but still, and you say that biology is important in terms of gender identification.
Right. What I mean by that is like the biology of my brain, my brain structure, the fact that my mannerisms as I've been born lean towards femininity. And that's what I mean by biology.
Yeah, okay. But I think what a feminist may respond and say, especially a second wave feminist, and will say, well, actually, what you describe as femininity are social constructions. Because when you were talking about playing with trucks and playing with dolls, this idea that boys play with trucks and girls play with dolls, or indeed that boys like blue or girls like pink, or any of those things that you kind of referred to growing up as being the reason why you've discovered femininity as what you are, or female mm-hmm. is what you are. Mm-hmm. A feminist may argue, actually, these are all social constructions. They don't have value in that sense, and that girls should be very much.
That's where I disagree with a lot of a lot of feminists feminists. But I do think that there is value there. But the reason why a lot of people like to argue against gender roles is because it has been applied to them toxically. I think there is a value in that when it's not applied towards when it's not forced on you, but it's there, because those gender roles are what helped me discover the fact that I'm trans. So I kind of put a value towards it.
So let me ask you a question. Why do you associate long-haired mammals, human beings, with femininity, for example?
I just do. Like, it could be the argument that it's a social role because, you know, I saw it on TV and I wanted it. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was whatever was the media. But to me, like, it's just what I want. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It's just like natural.
But here's what I'm saying. A couple of months ago, I decided I want to grow my hair a little bit as well because of lockdown or whatever, right? I don't mm-hmm. have a problem with my hair. Grows, becomes much longer. For me, I don't really associate necessarily long hair with femininity. It's mm-hmm. more prominent among females. I'm not denying that. Mm-hmm. But if someone wants to have long hair, I don't think that is a calling for transgenderism. I think that's just a calling for having long hair, right? You can enjoy having long hair and be a male.
Right. But there are ways in which you enjoy, like the majority of men who wear long hair, they don't do it to be feminine. They don't do it to feel like, you know, girly and to feel like themselves. And to me, that's what long hair does.
So what does feeling feminine actually feel like? Can you explain that? I'm quite interested.
So to me, it's seeing myself as a woman. And to me, for my personal definition, what that is what I am trying to work towards in my transition. So that it means to like have long hair, to have a high-pitched voice, to, you know, have a feminine body shape, you know, a little hourglass moment. But that's not to say that anyone else who doesn't have those they're invalid in their gender identity, but that's just how it is for me personally.
I understand. Once again, is that just touching upon some of those things, right? So say, for example, mm-hmm. a woman has very big waist and she has more of an hourglass shape, right? Mm-hmm. And there's another woman who does not have that, right? And mm-hmm. she is a, let's say, biologically self-identified woman. The one mm-hmm. who doesn't have the hourglass shape, do you mm-hmm. consider her less of a woman than the one who does have the hourglass shape?
I think that what a woman is in your own definition. And I would not say that that person is less of a woman. It's right. just for me. Like, for me, what my definition of a woman is might not line up with someone else's definition, but that doesn't make their gender identity any less valid.
Yeah, I understand. I know that. But what I'm trying to get out here is, what is the definition of a woman? So if you had to define a woman, how would you define a woman?
It's a great question. To be honest, right. there's like just follow, subscribe to all the gender roles, and that's what a woman is. And sometimes that's what I feel like. But then sometimes I'm like, a woman is whatever you think a woman is. But then I think, well, what if some grown ass man says he's a woman, and like, you know, what's gonna happen then? And so, you know, I am going back and forth. And to answer your question, mm-hmm. I do not know. I'm gonna just say,
but if someone looked like me and told you I was a woman, what would you?
Right, I would.
Yeah,
I would be a little. But you know, I don't want, like, I'm still learning. I'm still, you know, there could be someone who looks like you, but you know, lives their life as a woman. I don't know, like.
Yeah, that's someone who's, let's say, forget about me for a second. Someone who is a big person, right? And who is, maybe I'm describing myself here, and who's basically, if I was a woman, would be in the 100th percentile somewhere. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of testosterone in their body, has facial hair, you know, has testosterone, has male.
Because I don't want to go and say that if you have facial hair, you are not a woman, because I do know of some trans women who choose to just not get rid of their facial hair as a protest to gender norms and a protest that I am a woman and I don't need society to tell me that. But, you know, so that's where I don't want to go into and say that, oh, well, I don't think that, I think you have to follow these specific societal roles to be a woman. So that's why I'm a little, you know, hesitant.
Right. So what is a man?
It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Go on. Tell me what a man is.
A man is who you think a man is.
So if a person, a human being with a womb and that is 9 months pregnant, went to hospital and is giving birth and decided to identify as a man, would you take that seriously?
Well, there's plenty of trans men who have given birth, who have gotten pregnant, and what do you mean by take it seriously? Like, I would respect anyone's pronoun. I would respect anyone's, now, would you know, you, like, what they asked me to call them.
A man, in the same way as someone like myself would claim to be a man.
Do you think? Well, yeah, because then if I didn't believe that they're a man, then how do I believe I'm a woman?
All right, this is the point where I want you to focus with me, all right? Because in the beginning of this discussion, we talked about to what extent do you see manhood or womanhood defined as a social construct? Mm-hmm. And you kind of veered away from the third wave feminism and postmodernism and queer theory and stuff like that. And you basically said, I don't see that as being tenable. You moved towards a biological theory. You said that biology does have a part to play. You talked to yourself, you mentioned chromosomes, you talked about, brain structure and so on and so forth. And then we said, okay, so what is a man and what is a woman? So what I'm saying is there must be parameters, okay? If there is no parameters, the category is not a category. It's no longer a category. The category is, it's no longer something which you can put as a category. It's something which doesn't exist, right? It's meaningless. It's a meaningless category. So when we started talking about what is a man and what is a woman, when I started mentioning a woman, a person who's giving birth in a hospital, is 9 months pregnant, can they identify as a man? The argument of biology now, right, it seems to contradict this notion that you can have.
Right, but right. Does this person have like, and I don't want, because, you know, there is like, you can be a feminine trans man, but I think, like, what I meant by that is, like, is this, like, I would respect, I'm kind of like, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but there are, like, I know a trans guy that's gotten pregnant and has given birth. Like, that doesn't make him any more less of a man. Like, I know him, like, he fits my definition of a man.
Okay, what is the definition of a man?
My definition of a man is, masculine, macho, protective, facial hair, like, things that are considered traditionally manly.
Okay. So I think three or four of those things you can say about a lot of women, right? So protective, macho, I'm guessing means here has courage or courageousness or confidence, right? Mm-hmm. So I think those qualifiers there, or those kind of adjectives that you used, can easily be used with any woman,
right.
You agree with that?
I do agree with that, and that's why I feel like everyone has their own definitions of what gender is. That's not to say that if I see a macho masculine woman, I'm going to invalidate their gender and call them a man. I just traditionally, like, there's tradition, and then there's, like, people who don't subscribe to that tradition, and that's fine. But what that tradition is definition would be.
I get you. But so it seems to be like you're willing to respect someone if they came to you and said that they're a man, but they're giving birth, they're 9 months pregnant and they're in a hospital giving birth. You'll respect them. Okay.
Yes.
And you would definitely respect their pronoun. Yeah.
I would be lying if I said that in the back of my mind, I wouldn't be like,
you're a woman.
No, I don't. It did, like, no, I wouldn't say that, because there are some people who are just like, they don't, there's nothing about them that is would indicate that they are of the other gender, but they of another gender, but they claim to belong to it, like just a straight up, a very feminine person, a very just like someone who you would not think is even a lesbian, not implying that lesbians are all masculine, but when you, some of these people, they just claim to be trans, and I will respect them, but to be honest, like in the back of my mind, I am a little like, what's going on there? Do you have ulterior motives? Are you just looking for attention? Right. I'm a little, but that could just be my own internalized transphobia, refusing to accept that there are other gender expressions.
Okay, let me ask you a question that might seem off topic, but believe me, I'll come back to the topic, right? Mm-hmm. You live in America, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you believe there's racism in America against Black people?
Yes.
Yeah. I think most people would agree with you, right?
Yes.
Now, let's say there is, I know you've got affirmative action programs in America. You know affirmative action? Have you heard of it yourself? They bring people into universities and stuff like that. It's not a quota system, but it's a system where you'd give opportunities to Black people to come into universities where they would not otherwise have those opportunities. It's a program, but there's other things as well. It's just like, now there's a discussion about repatriations. Should Black people now get money reimbursements because of the slavery, the past, and all those things? And there's discussions about that. So I take it you obviously respect the movement. Like, I will ask you yourself, do you respect the movement of Black people trying to get their rights, trying to
Yes, because for the longest time, they have been left out of a lot of things. So it's only fair to give things that are only for them, you know?
Yes. And so would you also believe in something called white privilege, where, you know, the white, maybe middle class person has certain privileges that Black people don't have?
Yes.
All right. Now, if someone who, let's say, is an archetypal white person, right?
I feel like I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. Okay. I'm coming to you now. I told you we'll come back to our discussion and it'll make sense. Someone's an archetypal white person who's good. He's got a good salary. And he's got a big house and he's come out of Harvard or something like this, right? So everything is going well from the material sense, or in the material sense, for that person. And they come out and say, I identify as Black. And I want to have all the privileges that Black people have. To what extent will you accept this?
Not at all. Like, there's no reason, like, why? Like, you can't. Do they have racial dysphoria? Is that a thing that scientists have cracked down on, that numerous doctors and professors and educated people across the world have vouched support for? No, that's just someone looking for attention.
Yeah, I understand. But if someone is very sympathetic towards Black people's struggle, someone who is practically immersed themselves in the culture of Black Lives Matter, and they feel from this experience that they are genuinely are a Black person. They believe that they're a Black person. So would you respect them, and would you call them a Black person if they call
themselves Black? To the actual experiences and oppression that Black people face, that white person isn't going to feel those things, has never felt those things. So for what reason are they Black?
But someone
there's a conversation of someone who is not Black but passes as Black. There's a conversation on would they be able to claim the oppressions Black people have. Like, that is a potential conversation. But a white person who says they're Black just because they want to be Black,
But do you think that men could ever go through, men, let's say, when I say the word men here, let me be very clear, people who are born with XY chromosomes and who don't have a womb and who may have testosterone in their body and who may have a penis and testicles, someone who fits that description, someone like myself, could they ever feel the same way as a woman who's practically given birth and or feels the discomfort of the menstruation on a monthly basis, those biological points, which are exclusive to someone who has XX chromosomes and who has ovaries and who
actually that is not true. Those traits are not exclusive to people who have XX chromosomes. There are biological features are not exclusive to chromosomal sexes, because intersex people exist. There can be someone who has an XYX chromosome, but
I accept that. I'm not talking about those people. Those people, me and you have, where I think there's an agreement that they are kind of like an anomalous case or a case which needs a different discussion altogether. But I'm talking about someone who doesn't have XXY, who does have XY chromosomes, just XY, right? And that individual, could they ever have the same experience as a woman who has monthly menstruation, who has XX chromosomes, and who's given birth or who has the exact physiology of a woman, has estrogen in her body and all of those things? Do you think that someone who is XY can have those experiences, exact experiences?
I don't think that they can be the exact experiences as a cis woman, but I do not think that being a woman is dependent on menstruating. But to say that, like, when I go out and I get street harassed, I get catcalls, and when I go out into society as a woman, I am treated as a woman. So I do think that in most aspects, yes.
But the
and
same
there are actually...
Okay. Say, for example, we go back to our white man analogy or the comparison. Let's assume that the man is not fully white. He has one grandparent who's actually black. So do you think now the man has entitlement to call himself black?
I do not think that I am the person to speak on that, considering I am not black myself. I don't think that it's appropriate for me to speak on black experiences.
No, accepted. But in the first instance, when I ask you if he's white and can he identify
black? Right, because that changes things. Having having a black grandparent, is it visible? You know, there's all of these things. There are all these components that...
Right.
come together in that question, and I don't think it's my place to answer that.
What if he has a great grandparent?
It's still not my place to answer that.
Okay. No, because scientists say that especially evolutionary scientists, they say that we all originated from Africa somewhere, right? So everyone's got maybe a black ancestor. Everyone can say this. But the point I'm trying to make is that there doesn't seem to be an exact definition, right? And this goes back to our point. To what extent does biology input into our decision-making, right? Because can you imagine if there's two white people, they're as white as each other in terms of shade of their skin, yeah? One of them has one black grandparent and the other one doesn't. And for one of them, there's a conversation as to whether they can be black or not. And for the other one, there isn't. Someone can say this is actually discrimination of some sorts, because you're allowing some to come in and some not to come in, you see? And it's all based on self-identification, and it's it kind of trivializes to some extent biology. And this is the point: when we start to trivialize biology, then things will start to get messy, because then we'll start to say, okay, well, race is actually a social construction, and this is what some of them are saying: race is a social because if sex is a social construction. A lot of them will say, well, race is also a social construction.
Right, and the reason why people say that is because. You know, say that you are not black, you're not actually black, but you have a lot of the characteristics of black people. You have dark skin, you have, you know, curly hair. Then from society, you might be perceived as black and you might be treated as a black person. And so I think that's why a lot of people say that there is a societal component to race.
Yeah, I understand. But what I'm saying is that if we say it's a social construct in the sense that biology no longer matters in that sense, which you haven't said, but it's being said, right? If we say that, then if race is a social construct, then racism becomes a social construct as well, right? Likewise, if we say that sex is a social construct, then sexism is a social construct as well. And so on and so forth. So, and if the penis is some way a social construct, then rape becomes a social construct. So the social construct thing has no end, right? Which is why it's important to bring sanity back in the conversation with biology, right? And that's why I say that biology might not be a perfect science, but it's more exact than the social sciences, especially if we bring in postmodernism and these ideas of social constructions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about what is a man and what is a woman, what is a male and what is a female, I would put to you that, I would submit to you that the strongest way of identifying this is a biological approach. Okay, so do you agree with that? And to what extent do you agree with that?
I do not think that it should lie solely on biology. Like, again, it depends on what your definition of biology is, and also about, like, are you using this to, like, for example, with the argument of, like, very, like, chromosome, then I would be, I have a question for you. Do you consider me a man or a woman?
Finish what you were saying first, and I'll answer that question in a second.
And now answer my question. Do you see me as a man or a woman?
Well, on my definition, my personal definition, okay, you are XY. And so because you're XY, you would be male. I wouldn't put man or woman there yet. I'd say you're male. I think man is, now we're talking about characteristics, additional characteristics that you must have. I mean, calling someone a man is, I think, or a woman even, is a praise. Like saying you're a man, for me, that's almost praising them, right? But male is dhukura in Arabic. Dhukura, you're a male. You know, rujula is different. Rujula, now you're a man. Now you have certain characteristics which may be praiseworthy characteristics on my model, right? And if you're asking about my model, that's different. So I would say that you're a dhakar in the sense that you're a male from my perspective, because you're XY. You see what I mean? But you're not XX.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Okay, well,
I'll give you have feminine characteristics. But I also, you know, I think that feminine characteristics are praiseworthy characteristics. And I think that praiseworthy characteristics, whether a man or woman has them, are good ones to have. So, for example, many of the feminine characteristics that you have, I would wish to have as well, many of them. So, like, maybe compassion, maybe a loving attitude, maybe whatever it is that, you, that you've been described as, and that you're a very calm person, you're not cantankerous, you're not rude, you're, you know, all those things which are good. You know, I would wish to have them as well. So once again, this whole idea of femininity and masculinity, I think there is more of an intersection, to use a feminist term. There's more of an intersection, and there's more of interlocking, right? Boundaries, which we should explore. You see what I mean?
So you do not consider me a woman?
Well, look, it goes back to what the definitions are.
Yes or no. It's a simple yes or no. Do you consider me?
Yeah,
a woman?
I don't, because if the definition is XX or XY, then for me, a woman has to fulfill. If you're XX, are you XX or XY? For me, my definition of is biologically determined, right? So for me, it'll be XX.
And how would you refer to me in third person?
Whatever you'd like. I mean, I don't have a problem with, if you want me to call you whatever you want me to call you. Names are there for a reason. I don't invent your name. You make your own name.
And what pronouns would you use for me?
Pardon?
What pronouns would you use for me when talking about me?
Which ones would you want me to use?
She, her.
Okay, I'll use those.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'll use those. I mean, because
you have a very interesting position and all this, I'll give you that. I appreciate.
Look, I'm not here to try and hurt anybody's feelings, right?
Right.
I'm here to try, and what I'm doing with you here is just thinking out loud and being honest, right? I'm trying to try and disentangle lots of ideas that we both have, and trying to make sense of the world. At the end of the day, we're trying to make sense of the world. I understand that you have these ideas, that you have these kind of notions about yourself and about womanhood, about manhood, but for me, it really is about, let's have something solid. Yeah. But I think we should start with a very, because you can't build castles on.
I know. And you said that you want this, the scale of gender to be on a solid, you know,
yes,
this or that, and you're this or that. But when you talked about intersex people, you said that shouldn't the same be applied to them? But they don't. They don't have
specific. I would agree with you there. I think if you're talking about hermaphrodites,
the preferred term is intersex. Right.
Yeah. So intersex hermaphrodite. If you're talking about that, I think there's a valid scientific discussion there. I do think so. If someone's XXY or XYY or whatever it may be, I don't know how it works, but if that is the discussion, then I do think.
But doesn't that throw a wrench into the argument that gender is a that fits in a box and that you have to if you have this?
No, but that was never the argument. I was never making the argument. I think that for the most part, if we're talking about 7 billion people on the earth, I think it can be compartmentalized.
But for example, like for me, you said that I have XY, so yes. I'm a man. Anyone with XX or XY is, you know, a man or a woman. Yes. But doesn't that throw a wrench into the argument because that person also has XY chromosomes?
If a person has XXY chromosomes, they are an biological anomaly from the data that we have. And I would say that the way to deal with that is for that person to see what is more dominant for them in terms of not only their cognitive faculties, but actually their bodily composition. This is the usually what Muslim scholars would say that I've kind of taken knowledge from or whatever. That they would say that it depends on what's dominant. So I do think there's a discussion there with intersex people, right? I do think there's a discussion there with intersex people, but I don't think that. It's like the same discussion we're having with the white man with one grandparent, right? One black grandparent. You actually were the one to tell me, well, hold on, I don't want to speak about this. Let's go to the black community and let them kind of decide, right? And there may be a difference of it. So I'm saying the reason why is because the biological element. The same reason that you gave me for the black person or the white person with a grandfather that's black is the same thing I'm giving you with the XXY chromosome, is that there is a complexity, there's a biological complexity there, which requires us to now kind of unpack. But me and you kind of
and I think the same biological complexity is there with trans people, is that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but what the complexity is always, it starts with a biological base, right? If you think about it, because when we were talking about the white man with one grandparent that's black,
right,
that is strictly biological descriptor. Okay, they're not white in color, they're black in color, right? So you can actually go and see what color they, how much melanin they have.
And the same way a lot of trans people have gender dysphoria, a recognized medical condition in which the assigned sex at birth does not match their gender identity. So
I understand that's what that, I feel but now we're kind of moving to psychology, right? Because there is a big difference between the biological determiners and
I guess, that's what I was. I misspoke then. I wasn't referering to biology, but psychology. I think psychology plays an important factor in
sex. But in terms of ranking, right? If we go into the realm or the domain of psychology is important, then we have to say the white man that I gave you, the white, middle class man, he could have full psychological conviction that he's black, full psychological certainty that he's black. But you've disqualified him from ever being black because he doesn't have the skin for it, or he doesn't have the melanin for it, he doesn't have the parents for it, he doesn't have the grandparents.
Right. And see, that enters a very gray area because for trans people, you can, when you compare it to that, you can transition your race. You know how you're trying to say that the white person doesn't have black skin, or that's what I'm trying to say. It's a white person doesn't have black skin, they can't experience what a black person experiences, but that's not the same for trans people because I can transition into a woman and experience, I can transition my physical appearance into a woman and experience the experience of a woman.
But how do you know that you can experience an experience of a woman? How do you know what you're experiencing is the experience of,
because like,
for example, I am, white guy that we had the example of, he might have experiences which he thinks are the experiences of a black person, but they're not actually the experiences of a black person. So how do you know that?
Do they have white skin? It's a very simple question. What is the color of their skin?
Let's say the color of the skin is like Michael Jackson.
Okay. Well, I mean, I feel like you're trying to make this really complicated, but
what about that albino?
Huh? What are their features? Do they have African American features? Do they have like a large nose? Do they have like large lips? Like, these are things that matter when you're being perceived by society.
It depends. Like, you know, if you go to East Africa, they don't have as large nose and lips as they do in maybe other parts of Africa, but I don't think they're any less black.
Okay, I feel like we can go back and forth.
No, but do you see the idea? No, look, what I'm trying to say to you is that the argument has to go back to biology, right?
I don't think from what you're trying to say, that it has to be dependent on your chromosomes. I don't think that's true. No, sorry.
No, I'm not saying it has to be dependent on your chromosomes. That was just one of many things that you said, right? Mm-hmm. If you remember the beginning of this conversation, you said that mm-hmm. it's brain structure, chromosomes. I don't know what else you mentioned. I can't remember, but
physical appearance.
Yeah, physical appearance.
Yeah.
All right, and internal organs.
Yep. External organs, internal organs are actually getting to a point where they can transplant a uterus inside of a trans woman.
So, do you have a penis?
Like a trans woman could get pregnant.
Sorry to ask you a very straightforward question, but maybe you don't want to answer this. Right? Do you have a penis?
I am a minor. I do not feel comfortable answering that question.
Okay. Do you think that someone who does have a penis, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Do you think a penis is a disqualifier to womanhood?
And I do not think so. Because is your penis out and about when you're being perceived by society?
Yeah.
Most likely not. And there are some people who just embrace the fact that they have a dick, and that's just that, but they're still a woman, and they're still being true to themselves, and that's where it is a very gray area. And I'm sure you're trying to like find some gotcha moment and where I say inconsistent things.
No, of course not.
I'm trying to figure out like where I lie. Like like if you were to ask me right now, do you need dysphoria to be trans, I don't have a straightforward answer to that. So to a lot of questions you're asking me, I really don't have a straightforward answer.
No, that's cool. But so long as you're willing to go back and think about them and maybe listen to this again, because I'm not trying to believe you, you know, my approach here is laid back. You know, we're having a discussion. I'm just being honest and thinking out loud. But I want you to think about it, because these are really important questions. Mm-hmm. And I want you, it's not a decision that you could take lightly, because, you know, if you want to actually do the SRS, for example, so a lot of people want to mm-hmm. do SRS surgeries. That's a huge decision. I want you mm-hmm. to know that, right? That is a huge decision that will severely alter, you know, your life forever. It could, if you decide to do it. I don't know if you're deciding to do it or what. I'm not sure what the guidelines are in terms of age.
You don't even know if I've had it done.
Oh, if you haven't had it done. Exactly, right. But it's a huge decision, right? And that's one thing you don't want to get wrong. Which is why
I agree.
We're talking about these things and we're thinking about them, because a lot of people actually commit suicide. There's lots of statistics, like shocking statistics, about people who have gone through the surgery and mm-hmm. highly regret that. Okay. Because mm-hmm. we are developing people.
Two questions for that. The first one is, did you know that the majority of people that deep transition not because they felt as if they picked the wrong gender identity, but that it was just too hard being trans, and the oppression and the societal pressures they faced was too much. And that's also another reason why a lot of trans people, even after surgery, end up killing themselves.
Yes.
Did you know that?
No, it's a very interesting fact. It's good to talk about that. And I want to talk to you about the Islamic aspect. Okay,
yeah, because this is what I am here for. This is what I'm here for. Whoa. Literally, why, only reason why I came. Because okay. I know you have a very conservative audience, and I wanted to communicate my views to them and the way I see things. And
I've got a conservative audience.
I've done some lurking in your comment section, sir. but no, I do have a lot of questions, because like a lot of people are, I'm sure you've seen my mentions, or if not, like they're filled with people telling me I'm a kafir, I can't be trans and Muslim, this, this, and that, like it's haram. But I really disagree with that. And I want to get into that.
Well, let's start with homosexuality.
Yes.
Okay, because let me just throw a verse at you and tell me how you interpret it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a verse in Surah An-Naml, which goes like this. It goes, وَلُوطًا إِذْ قَالَ لِقَوْمِهِ أَتَأْتُونَ الْفَاحِشَةَ مَا سَبَقَكُمْ أَحَدٌ مِّنْ الْعَالَمِينَ أَإِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِّنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ بَلْ أَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ تَجْهَلُونَ. That you go approach men, shahwa, lustfully, مِنْ دُونِ النِّسَاءِ, other than women, right? So now, in other words, this is not, you're not going for women, you're going for men. بَلْ أَنْتُمْ قَوْمٌ تَجْهَلُونَ. Nay, you're an ignorant people.
Yes.
And then the verse continues, but how do you reconcile that with your worldview?
Yeah, so my interpretation of the Quran and the story of Lut, I think that verse was condemning the rape and the adultery that occurred in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right.
I think that because I just have a very straightforward question. How is a creator going to make a person a certain way and then forbid their existence? Like, I have to cover up because male sexuality is so strong, and like, we need to stop creating temptations for them and make it easier for them. But then we go around and tell gay people that they are, that their sexuality is a sin, that they have to live their life as a vegetable with no companionship, with no love. That doesn't sound like a merciful God to me. And so when I read those verses and I looked at it with that in mind, I was like, hey, some people, they can accuse you of reaching. And, you know, even if it is reaching, that's a reach I'm willing to take, because I cannot like make myself believe that love is wrong, that two consenting people is wrong. But when you look at the story of Lut, they were thieves, they were highway robbers, they were rapists, they were terrible people. Terrible, terrible people. I don't think that's comparable to gay people.
Yeah, okay. I grant you all of that. But the verse I quoted you was particularly condemning the shahwa. It was condemning the lustful attitude that they have and that they acted upon towards men.
Mm-hmm. And the way I interpreted that is it's you are cheating on your wives and with someone else. I don't put as much value on the fact that it states man. And I know, like, to a lot of people, that is, no, you're picking and choosing, you're reaching. But like, you know that the Quran instructs us to, supposedly a lot of ex-Muslims, they're like, oh, the Quran instructs us to hit our wives if they misbehave. And
you're saying our wives?
Not like.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Now you're going back to the mill. You know, you're thinking like a man.
That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. Stop. Okay. And a lot of Muslim scholars, I just find it very fascinating how when it comes to that, they're like, well, a word has thousands of interpretations, or so many things that this could mean.
Yeah.
I apply that same way of thinking when I read passages in the Quran that could be interpreted as homophobic or transphobic.
Yeah, but
I don't think there are any
passages difference
in the
between
Quran.
The two, I would say, is that whereas there are, like, what we do with the Quran, in order not to make it whatever we want it to say and for us to read from it what God wants us, because look, we have to go back to basics. We believe the Quran is the final revelation.
Yeah, and God, you, right? So I'm assuming you're going to say we look at hadiths, right?
No, not even. I was just going to say that we look at the clear text. So when Allah says, قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ, say He's God, one and only. Mm-hmm. We don't try and reinterpret that in the way we want, because, you know, the Quran says something quite interesting, right? There's a verse in chapter 3, verse 7.
Mm-hmm.
آيَاتٌ مُحْكَمَاتٌ هُنَّ أُمُّ الْكِتَابِ وَأُخَرُ مُتَشَابِهَاتٌ فَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ زَيْغٌ فَيَتَّبِعُونَ مَا تَشَابَهَ مِنْهُ بِتِغَاءِ الْفِتْنَةِ وَبِتِغَاءِ تَأْوِيلَةِ.
Mm-hmm.
So this verse is saying that from this book, there's two kinds of verses. Minhu ayatun muhkamat. There is the clear-cut verses. And these are the foundations of the book. These are the the basis of the book, if you like. وَأُخَرُ مُتَشَابِهَاتٍ And other verses are ambiguous. فَأَمَّا الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ زَيْغٍ As for those individuals in whose hearts there is diversion, if you like. فَيَتَّبِعُونَ مَا تَشَابَهَ مِنْهُ بِتِغَاءَ الْفِتْنَةِ وَبِتِغَاءَ تَأْوِيلَهِ They follow that which is ambiguous from it, seeking therefrom some kind of tribulation and seeking to apply interpretation, excessive interpretation to it. And no one can really interpret those ambiguous verses except for God. But the point I'm making here is when it comes to understanding the Quran, it's really important to look at what the clear-cut verses are saying. So in this verse, it's saying this, أَإِنَّكُمْ لَتَأْتُونَ الرِّجَالَ شَهْوَةً مِن دُونِ النِّسَاءِ Are you, this is a rhetorical question, are you approaching men sexually and lustfully from other than women? In other words, you have...
And that where it says instead, that other is where I feel like it's referring more to the fact of adultery and the fact how the people have cheated on their wives by raping other men.
Well, that to be viable, it would be min dun nisaikum, right? For it to be your wives, it would be, it'd have to be nisaikum, it'd have to be your wives, right? But it's not saying min dun nisa. So alif lam here is istighraqiyya. This is alif lam genitive. It's completely encapturing all women that exist. An-nisa, alif lam, which is like all women. So innakum latatuna rijala shahwatan min duni nisa. Yeah, from other than women as a category. So are you going for men other than women as a category? That's why you're not fine, because you got to think about conceivability here. It can't be that for 1,400 years, 440 years, if you want to be exact, right? There's been so many commentators, man, woman, people from China to Spain, right? For 1,400 years. Nobody has interpreted this verse in the way that you're saying. No one has done that. It couldn't be that everybody is ignorant of that. It couldn't be. You see what I mean?
And I do think that there is... I feel like there's Allah is doing everything for a reason.
Yes.
And I think caused those commentators to, you know, agree with the mainstream belief. But when you look at it from a perspective, when you're not forced to believe anything and you're not forced, because in a lot of places you have to believe something and that's just the way it is. Otherwise you face persecution from the government or from other people. But when I look at it, from just an open mind, and I read, and you also have to acknowledge the fact that seems like straight up oppression. Like, you cannot, conversion therapy has been known to not work, has been known to be extremely harmful to the participants. So what, like, if we were to believe that homosexuality is a sin, what is a gay person supposed to do?
Well, we have to be clear here on what kind of homosexuality we believe is a sin. So we don't believe that if you have homosexual feelings.
Right. But then it's the argument, oh, if you act on it, then, you know, you're sinning.
Not just that. If you act upon it, I mean, if you think about the act of homosexuals, I'm sorry to put this into a vivid format for you, but actually having sex, a man having sex with another man, for example, where the penis is going into the rectum repeatedly to the point where it could even injure the other person. And it's actually very painful. It must be very painful. We're talking about that act. We're talking about a man deciding to undress, unclothe another. Obviously, everything that leads up to it is also haram, right? But unclothe another man, for example, I'm giving you one act, homosexual act, and then erecting himself and penetrating the rectum to the point where, you know, if you read reports, many of these men's anuses become injured with fissures. It's called fissures because of the deep penetration of, you know, and bleeding comes out. And sometimes they can't even hold their own stool. So they'll be walking in the street and the stool actually just comes out of their anuses. They can't even hold up. This is a serious act. For someone to do that repeatedly, I mean, it's quite a selfish act.
And I think the reason I I don't think that homosexuality is like, I don't think that being a gay person is revolves 100% around sex. I don't think that's what it all is about.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we're talking, and that's why it's important to, when we're talking about these things, that is for us like the crux or the pinnacle of what's haram, right? These kinds mm-hmm. of actions. And if when you start to, and I'm sorry to have, you know, really spelled it out for you like this, but it's important.
Yeah, you want, let's just spell it. Do you know that? The male G spot is located inside the anus.
This is a myth.
Why would God put a G spot?
I mean, that might look. I'll be honest. I don't know if there's any study that says that is the case.
No, the prostate.
You know, I was working with. I'll tell you a story. I used to work in the city, in the center of London. Yeah, where there's like mm-hmm. tall buildings, like what you guys have in Manhattan or something like that. And I was 19 years old, so close to your age. And this was the argument. I was actually. Selling land. I was a land broker. Mm-hmm. And one day I was talking to a female that was working there as well. And she said to me exactly this. She said, you know, why is it the case? If you know, if God is forbidding homosexuality, why would he put the G-spot of the man inside of the anus of the man? Mm-hmm. I turned around. I did not know what she's talking about. That was 10 years ago. And I still don't know.
You went home and got a cucumber. No, I'm kidding.
No, I don't know. What the hell? No, honestly, I don't think even any study can. Maybe for some men, I'm not saying, but that is aside the point. The point of the matter is this, is that honestly, genuinely, the point of the matter is if God tells you to do something, even if you don't like it for yourself, would you do it?
Yes, but it's in the question. The question is, do you believe that, you know, the mainstream belief, it is that it's a sin and Allah asked us to not do this. I don't think so, because why should a person be denied companionship, be denied the feeling of affection, be denied the feeling of acceptance solely because of something that they can't control themselves? I can't wrap my head around that.
Here's what I'm saying. Look, let me give an example. And I've used this example before, so maybe I'll use it again, right? What about someone who's fallen in love in a non-platonic romantic way with their own sister? They're like their brother of the sister, and they fall in love romantically, non-platonically with them. Mm-hmm. Would you endorse this kind of relationship?
No, because incest has a lot of harmful effects, that it's very tiring that homosexuality is constantly compared to things like pedophilia and incest, when incest has direct harmful impacts on society.
Yeah, yeah, incest, I know, but I've not compared it to pedophilia. I've just mentioned brother and sister.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't mean to put words in your mouth, but that's just a lot
of arguments. How about brother and brother?
Huh?
Brother and brother.
That just seems wrong to me. Like,
why though? Why is it wrong?
It just seems wrong to me. Like, that's why. Yeah.
Two brothers, okay, or a brother and sister, but they use a condom or some kind of contraceptive.
It seems wrong to me. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. The same way that like homosexuality just seems unnatural.
Let me ask you a question. If someone, good friend of yours, said, look, I want to tell you a secret. I'm sure you're the kind of person who says, no problem, come into my house. Where are you from? Middle East? Maybe you make some tea or something, or the, you know.
Oh, also, I have another point.
I don't know. Where are you? What country are you from?
I'm from Pakistan.
Okay.
I'm Pakistani. I was born in the US.
Okay. Nope. Yeah, I understand. So you get some curry. I don't know, some naan. You know, these kind of things that you guys eat. Yeah. Baba Zeeshan's also from Pakistan, you see. So, okay, you sit down, you have the curry, blah, blah, blah. And then he opens up, you know, your friends open up. Yeah. You say, what's going on? I say, look, I want to tell you something, but just don't tell anyone. Say, what's going on? Say, look, you know, my sister, I've got, you know, kind of relationship. I've got kind of feelings for her. And I don't want you to judge me, but if God loved me so much, why would, you know, it says, حُرِّمَتْ عَلَيْكُمْ أُمَّهَاتُكُمْ وَبَنَاتُكُمْ. In the Quran, it says, he's also a Muslim, right? And it says, in the Quran, it says, you're not allowed to marry your mothers and your daughters and your sisters and so on.
And so what my response to that argument is, you're still attracted to women, yes or no?
Me?
Like, no, this incestual person who has fallen in love with their sister, they're still attracted to women. Like, yeah, it might not, there is a way out for them in this situation. Gay people do not have a way out. They cannot.
Oh, like, I see what you're saying here. But no, what if they love that person so much that they cannot imagine life with anyone except for them?
Too bad, so sad. Like, that's
okay. But would you advise them to fight it? Would you advise them to just go with it?
I would advise them to fight it. I would tell them the harmful effects of incest, even with the condom, because condoms are not 100% effective in preventing pregnancy. And also, just like,
what if she says, I'm so sorry to say, but I'm giving oral sex?
That, I mean, I still think that's wrong, because like the Quran says it's wrong, and like I don't see an argument as to why it couldn't be wrong.
All right, so you're using the Quran here, right? You'd use the Quran. Yes. Okay, but the Quran is as explicit. Okay, it's as explicit in its in fact it's actually more explicit in its prohibition of homosexuality than it is with incest, because it's actually only one verse in the entire Quran that forbids incest, which is in chapter 4.
Mm-hmm. And but there's, I think,
at least 10 verses that forbid.
Yes, and the majority of those verses that are supposedly condemning homosexuality often talk about the action of the people of Lut, not specifically what they... I know that one verse you did specifically brought that up, but I do see another side, but I don't see that other side for incest, because...
Okay.
This so person, why?
What's the evidence you would say is more piercing for incest that isn't piercing for homosexuality?
The fact that the condemnation of incest is not oppression, because you can go find someone else. You're still attracted to other women.
But what you're doing is not using the Quran, but you're using your own logic here, right? So because the verses, when it says when it forbids incest, it just says hurrimat alaykum, two words. Mm-hmm. It's been made haram for you, your mom, your mm-hmm. daughters, your sisters. It says hurrimat alaykum. It says two words, right? It's been made haram for you. You could even interpret that. There's more scope of interpretation in that verse than there is for the other verses about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? But I see where you're coming from. You're coming from more logical perspective, right?
Yeah.
You seem to, correct me if I'm wrong, but you seem to be saying, okay, how could God possibly or conceivably allow? Yeah, this is what you're saying. Someone who is born a certain way, someone who feels a certain, and this feeling is outside of their scope. They cannot control how they feel. And they just want to be in a loving, warm, companionship type relationship with another man or another woman, if it's a woman. And so how could God allow, or why would God deny the love of those individuals?
Right.
Is that where you are? Here's my answer. Yeah. Look. The purpose of life is not that people enjoy maximum pleasure. This is it. The purpose of life is not that people enjoy maximum pleasure. Sometimes.
Right.
Right. Sometimes.
Because there can be some, like, you could kill people and that can make you happy. But that.
Absolutely.
That,
right. Right. But not only that, you can. There are things that Islam, because Islam means submission to God, to the will of God. Right. So when, like, for example, let me give you the best example you get from the Quran. The Abraham story, which is also concurrent with the Old Testament, right? Where Abraham mm-hmm. had his sons, and he said, Abraham, he went to his son, we believe Ismail, inni ra'aytu fil manami inni adbahuka. Yeah, I saw in my sleep that I'm going to have to slaughter you. And obviously we know that the prophet's dreams, are revelation. So he says, "Mada tara? Tell me what to do." So, you know, do what you, the son said, do what you've been ordered to do, and you'll find me patient. So he took him, and obviously mm-hmm. he was about to slaughter his own son. But before he did so, you know, God sent down revelation telling him that instead you can slaughter this sheep. And they slaughtered the sheep instead of the son. And that's why we do so on Eid al-Fitr. That's what we, Eid al-Adha. What we do on the big Eid after in Dhul Hijjah, why we slaughter the sheep and so on and so forth. So this shows you, look, if you submit to God, right? If you submit to God, even if it's something you don't like, God's going to give you a way out. And that's why the Quran says, وَمَن يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever has God consciousness and fear of God consciousness, Allah will offer that person a way out. وَيَرْزُقْهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبْ. And Allah will provide for that person from places that they never thought even existed. But it's a conditional. You have to submit wholeheartedly to God. Even
like okay, even what I let really me put it. Let me stop what you're saying. If I'm Shia, okay. So if Imam Mahdi came down and he told me that if Imam Mahdi appeared, or if even for the Sunni counterparts, if there was a direct line from Allah Subhanahu wa Taala that said homosexuality is a sin, I will believe it. I will believe it, and I would listen. But I think that there is some space there. There's some room that allows you to think with logic. And I don't think that, like, I don't understand how that's just like the one of the biggest sins in Islam, and just like love. Like I can't wrap my head around that. But when you compare that to the story of the prophet, he had a direct revelation. Like there was absolutely no room for doubt that that's what Allah wanted him to do. I think that there is that room for doubt for homosexuality.
But that's an invented room for doubt, right? It is invented. The truth of the matter is, it's the same in Shi'i Islam, in Sunni Islam, in Christianity, and in Judaism. There is widespread consensus here, practically almost everywhere. I mean, there are some people nowadays which are trying to, you know, change the rules or whatever in the church, but that's different. Almost everyone recognizes that as an aberration. Everyone agrees that the act of penetrative homosexual sex between man, there's no way anyone's going to, you know, accept that and allow that. And likewise, transgenderism is something which is haram, because the hadith of the Prophet Muhammad, and obviously this is in Bukhari, but there is likewise hadiths, similar hadiths, that the Prophet basically says the ones who's trying to imitate the opposite sex is la'ana Allah. The curse of Allah.
Do you know the backstory behind that hadith?
There's more than one hadith, right? So one of them is narrated by Ibn Abbas. One of them is narrated by Ibn Hurairah. There's more than one of those hadiths. So those hadith are...
Do you know what happened for the Prophet, peace be upon him, to make that statement?
The hadith I'm referring to, there's two of them, right? So there's one that says... there's لعن رسول الله المخنث والمترجلات من النساء المخنثات من الرجال والمترجلات من النساء. That's one of them. And that's Ibn Abbas's riwayah. There's another one which says المتشبهين are the ones who, you know, try and imitate the opposite gender. It's so once again, it's all scattered around the corpus. There's more than one occasion. In fact, this shows you the strength of the reports, because there's so many of those reports. If it was just one isolated report, then you know, it would be something else, but if there's so many of those,
if there was one isolated report, it would be a different, there was room for doubt, right?
If it was one isolated report with one person, that's that is only one person at each stage that is that is narrating it, yes, there would be room for doubt, yes, but there, that isn't
so case. Wait, are you talking, so there's two hadiths that are used to oppress trans people in Islam, and the first one is in which the Prophet, peace be upon him, cursed those who imitated other genders, and then there was also a hadith in which a man had mandi on his henna on his hands and was brought to the Prophet and was banished. So do you know the reasoning as to why the Prophet made the statement on imitating other genders?
Yeah, so like I said, there's more than one. So the one I think you're talking about is a different one, which says that, you know, that there's a prohibition on the ones who wear the clothes, literally the word is lubs, yeah? يَلْبُسُونَ لُبْسَةَ النِّسَاءِ. I think this is the hadith where they literally wear the clothes of women, and the women who wear the clothes of men. And there's actually a really interesting narration by Ibn Mas'ud, which I think it's a weak narration, but this one is interesting because it kind of goes into this, where it talks about min alamat as-sa'ah, from the signs or the portents of the hour. These all other ones are strong narrations, by the way. This one is, there's weakness in it. يكتفي الرجل بالرجل والمرأة بالمرأة. That basically mm-hmm. that a man is going to be satisfied with another man and a woman's going to be satisfied with another woman. In other words, this widespread homosexuality is going to take place before the Day of Judgment. So lots of hadiths. If it was just one, then there would be a discussion. But there are so many of them.
So my question to you is, like, do you know what prompted the Prophet, peace be upon him, to make these statements? Yes or no?
All of them.
Yes, just regarding... I think, from my research, yeah. there are different narrations of this one certain circumstance, and then there's this other hadith that has the potential of, you know, there's like, okay, well, the argument that I'm about to make might not apply there, but I see it as if this is a very standalone hadith. There could be a lot of things that we don't know that happen, but the most common one that is quoted to oppressed trans people is in a scenario in which a mukantan, I was told I'm pronouncing that wrong. Am I pronouncing that right? Mukantan?
No, don't worry about pronunciation. Don't worry.
There was one working inside the household of the Prophet, peace be upon him, and was caught describing the body of another It was a woman that was in the house. It was caught describing the body of her to another man in an inappropriate manner. And that is in which the statement from the Prophet was made that curse these people and that act like this. And I think that the big thing is for immoral reasons, because if the Prophet hated all trans people,
that's definitely not what we're saying. We're not saying that the Prophet hated all people
who say that they were banished and they were thrown out of the houses. But I think there's a reason behind that. Like
So the hadith of akhrijuhum min buyutihim is that's one hadith in Ibn Abbas's hadith. But this is once again requires elaboration. We're not saying take them out of the house, like dehouse them or kick them out. We're not advocating here. And I want to be very, very clear, right? We're not advocating any oppression against anybody. We're not advocating.
Right.
Yeah, we're not advocating that anybody from any background is not welcome to be a Muslim, to be introduced to Islam, We're not advocating hate towards any community, but we are just trying to be honest with a tradition that is 1,440 years old, which is the Islamic tradition. And we're trying to be, I can't cheat you. Like, you see, if I had you on and didn't make it very clear what the Quran and Sunnah said and what the scholars interpreting the Quran and Sunnah said for 1,000 years, I think you'd go about and say, well, this guy's, you know, he's playing me about, right? So I have to be honest with you. I'm not bringing you on to try and score points with you or to try and attack you. I hope you have not felt like that. Mm-hmm. Have you felt like that, or have you felt like this has been okay?
It's been okay.
Yeah. Okay. Good. It's been okay. That's the idea. Okay. Look, a lot of people that are going through what you're going through, it's a very natural and normal thing.
But what I want
you to know is that, look, we're here for you. Honestly, we're here for you. We'll listen to your concerns and we'll give you what we think you need to hear. Right.
Okay.
We're going to give you something solid. A lot of people that you might go to, your friends, right, are going to give you kind of like maybe
what makes you happy. Yeah, I know. I get what you're trying to say.
The Quran says something really beautiful, and I want to just kind of push this to you. There's a beautiful verse in Surah Al-Baqarah, chapter 2 of the Quran. It says, "Kutiba alaykum al-qital wa huwa kurhun lakum." That fighting has been made obligatory upon you, and it's something you hate. This wasn't a case, self-defense case, and so on. Yeah, because fighting is something that people get really scared about, right? Imagine fighting, and your life can be lost. Yeah. But then the Quran says something really beautiful, and it should be just remember. If there's anything you want to remember from this conversation, it's just this bit here. وَعَسَىٰ أَن تَكْرَهُ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ وَعَسَىٰ أَن تُحِبُّ شَيْئًا وَهُوَ شَرٌ لَكُمْ وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. You could hate something, but it could be good for you, and you could love something, but it can be bad for you, and Allah knows, and you don't know. There's lots of things that if I wasn't a Muslim, would be doing. Yeah. I'm sure there's lots of things if you weren't a Muslim, maybe doing. I would be acting upon so many of my impulses. I'd probably be selling some illegal substances, maybe buying some illegal substances, maybe harming some people. Maybe I'd be in prison. I don't know. I don't know what I would do, to be honest. But there's lots of things that I've, because the, you know, the hadith says something really beautiful. It says, huffat al-jannah bil-makareh, that Jannah or heaven, the heavenly abode, has been surrounded by things which are hated. In other words, not hated ideologically, but hated is difficult to do. They're difficult things to do.
Islam is not about expression.
It's not about you just coming out and being whatever you want to do and doing whatever you want and enjoying and lusting. And Islam is about, it's about submission. It's about submitting to one God. He knows what's best for you. Like, for example, if you had a problem, right? If your stomach started hurting very badly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you start vomiting or whatever, and you start, your skin started to change color. Maybe you start become a little bit darker. Okay. Mm-hmm. After you've gone to the Black Lives Matter protest, what would you do after that? You'd go to the doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was just joking about that. But you'd go to the doctors, right? Because you know why? Because the doctor knows what's good for you, right?
So you agree. The doctor knows what's good for you.
You agree with that, yeah?
Yes. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, the doctor, I mean, I'll sometimes go for a second opinion, but for the most part, good doctor knows what's good for
me.
So right?
I want to get back into what I was saying.
Yeah, go
is
on. But let me just complete this. Sorry. Just complete this and then we can get back to what you're saying. So the doctor knows, you sit there and you go to the doctor's GP, whatever. You guys call him GP in America. I don't know what you call him. We call him GP, general practitioner. Is that what it is? All right, so I don't want to make a mistake there. You go to the doctors and the doctor says to you, look, this is a prescription. Boom, yeah? You're going to have to take three, whatever it is, a day, okay? You take the three tablets a day and it is what it is, yeah? It might actually harm you. It might be disgusting. It might be a medicine that's quite sour, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know it's for your best interest because you are convinced that the doctor is competent and knowledgeable to the extent where you're not. And I'm saying this to you that when you are truly submissive to God, you have to be convinced that he is competent and knowledgeable to the extent where you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why submission is a very powerful and beautiful thing. It's more powerful and beautiful when you submit to the all-knowing God than it is to, you know, submit to your own desires, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Go on. What do you want to say?
So what I wanted to say is the whole reason why I joined this is to explain my views of the permissibility of transitioning in Islam.
Right.
So a lot of people like to say that all the Muqantan were cursed by the Prophet, peace be upon him. I don't think that's true because in the very hadith that states that, what's it called, these people are supposed to be cursed, it stated that there was one working in the household of the Prophet and all of them stem from that moment in which before this person had access to both male and female quarters and the woman didn't have to wear hijab in front of them.
Yeah.
And when it was discovered that one was acting moral, that person was pushed out and cursed. And this is not a belief that I only have. There are many scholars that actually believe this. They categorize the Muqantan, I do not know the exact Arabic of it, pardon me, but they categorize them as those who have feminine characteristics for immoral reasons to be, whether that's like just immoral reasons and like stated in the situation where this person wanted to gain access to female quarters to spy on them. And there's also those who have innate feminine characteristics. Like that is just who they are, like they can't control it. There is a scholar, I think his name was Al-Nawawi. He states that there's two kinds of Muqantan. There is the one that's immoral and there's sin for them to act like that, and there is one that can't control it, that's just who they are. Sin behind that.
You talk about the Khuntha. Hmm? You talk about the
Khuntha. It's Muqantan, something like that. Khuntha.
Mukhannath.
Yes. Mukhannath.
Yeah, okay, so look, let's quickly differentiate between categories, right? So you have a Khuntha, which is, let's say, intersex, yeah?
Yes.
And there's a term called khuntha mushkil, which is basically
someone who can't be determined.
Okay, that's different, right? So that's
yeah, that's different.
Kind of what scholars have said about the khuntha mushkil is that the kind of the hermaphrodite intersex person is that, like we said, the dominance, whatever is dominant.
Yeah, no, biologically, not to confuse, right? Not to confuse that's one thing. With the khuntha.
Now we're talking about, then you have another category of people that were what you call a eunuch, yeah? I'm not sure if you've come across this term. It's basically men in prehistoric Arabia who had their penises cut off. Okay. And that was a practice some men went through, not for transitioning purposes, but that was just if they were in the slave class and that happened to them as a humiliation or some kind of retribution or something like that. And so these eunuchs, as they were called eunuchs, and these individuals were. Some scholars allowed, for example, a woman to wear, you know, normal clothes in front of them. Well, not normal clothes, but not to wear the hijab in front of them and so on. Then you have people that want to actually be something and they're something else. That's the third category, which we're talking about, which is really transgenderism. We're not talking about eunuchs and we're not talking
transgender
about...
Transgender people. Transgender is an adjective.
Right, right. Yeah, so trans people, right?
Yeah.
So, no, as opposed to transvestites, because transvestites are people who cross-dress, but not... Yeah. And once again, cross-dressing, there is specific hadith on that. And we say that the hadith are very clear and they're coming from different sources and they disallow it. The hadiths on, which are more than one, right? Which talk about imitation, that's also very clear. So let me ask you a question. If the Prophet was in front of you right now, if he came to you and said, listen, I want the best for you, but I want you to take off your hijab, okay? And I want you to wash up your makeup and I want you to have a ghusl, wash yourself fully. And I want you to pray and act as a man after that. Would you have any hesitation?
No, that's the messenger of Islam. Why would I disobey him?
Right.
But I don't believe that that's what he wants. Because so going back to... So I wasn't referring to the kunta. I was referring to the mukannas. So Anwa'i, he divided those into two categories, and that's another reason why I'm like, okay, this is my beliefs on homosexuality could be considered a reach, but this is what I feel like is not a reach because it is very clear and it's been supported by other scholars throughout history, and like what's it called? There was actually a, you know, Al-Azhar University?
Al-Azhar, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know that there was actually, there was a trans woman there who got a fatwa from a Sunni scholar. I think his name was Tanti. I'm sorry, I'm butchering these names. But, oh my God, I feel like a white convert. But he, a very prominent Sunni scholar who gave the permissibility of this student to transition and to be able to take the test in the female quarters because this person wasn't being allowed to take their test in the male section. They weren't allowed to take the test in the female section. So they released, and so my question is this very knowledgeable Sunni scholar who has devoted his life to Islam, and there's so many other scholars who have also said that this is allowed. And you know how you say that you think the doctor knows what's best for you.
Yeah.
Doctors, medicine, psychology, all of that supports trans people. They acknowledge that we have a medical condition.
Well, look, like I said to you before.
And when I go to my doctor, he's the one that prescribes me my estrogen.
No, look, you have to differentiate between going to your doctor who's prescribing you your estrogen. Okay. I'm not sure if you have to pay for that. You know, in the USA.
It's covered. I am very blessed to live in a state where it's covered by insurance.
By the way, sorry, just as a tangent, what's it doing to you?
The effects, they're amazing. I've developed breasts. I'm like
serious.
Almost a D cup. I know everyone's always shocked because like I don't really wear tight clothes, but I have like I've developed breasts. My body shape has gotten very like I've grown hips. I'm a very feminine body shape.
What? Wait a minute. All of this from estrogen. You're just taking estrogen, and you're that's happening to you.
Yes, and the other thing is, I am blocking my testosterone. So like do not have that testosterone, and what's it called? My skin has gotten a lot softer. Like I don't know how to describe it. It's just gotten a lot softer, a lot clearer. The hair on my body.
Are you less angry, more angry?
Oh my God. I am very, so when a trans woman first starts estrogen, they're very all over the place. I am very moody, very emotional. Like I will, these are like the downsides. Like I will like watch like something that's like completely unrelated to my life, and I'll just sit there and start sobbing for like 20 minutes. It makes me very, because it takes a couple of years for your body to have a continual cycle, because trans women actually go through a hormonal menstrual cycle, in the sense that when cis women have go through their menstrual cycle, you know how their hormone levels differentiate. Trans women also go through that cycle. But for the first 2 years, it's like your body's trying to get adjusted to it. But yeah, the hair on my body has slowed down like significantly. What else? I was very fortunate enough to start hormones at 16. So since I haven't completed my puberty, my male puberty, my facial shape is like kind of changing. Because when you start estrogen young, there's a chance that it can actually change your bone structure.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you miss something that you had when you had testosterone? So like, if there are things that you miss from having testosterone in your body, what are the ones that you do miss?
Nothing. Like, I mean, I do miss the male privilege that I got as I was, you know, people would actually take me seriously, but I don't miss like anything, like
really,
when it comes not that they when I look back at an old video,
did you not feel stronger when you had that testosterone in your body?
I did feel stronger, but it's like putting, I felt like a woman in a man's body. Like I felt like out of place. Like this isn't who I am. I'm a very like this kind of person, you know. I'm not like a macho yeah. man. So like, and when I look back at old videos of myself, I can't recognize myself. I'm like, that's disgusting. Like it makes me cringe.
I find it fascinating. Look, I'm going to say to you, look, I want you to really think about what we talked about today. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take too much of your time. You've communicated with me on Twitter, and you can ask me any question you want,
mm-hmm.
but what I want to end this conversation with here, obviously we're ending on good terms, and there's no, mm-hmm. hopefully you don't feel any hostilities or tensions, or I'm not trying to get you. I'm not trying to harm anybody. We're just having a good discussion. I want you to really think about it, right? Do me one favor. Okay. Do mm-hmm. me one favor. Review this conversation and the questions that we've had. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And make a prayer called istikhara prayer. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. istikhara.
Yeah.
Istikhara. And ask Allah to guide you to the right path.
I know. I ask Allah that every
ask it one more time and ask him.
Yeah, I know. I will do it. But yeah, I think we should all be asking Allah to guide.
Of course. I'll make dua for you. Okay.
So that you, and you I'll make dua well, yeah? for you as well.
Yeah, I've said that already. See, I said it before you said it. Okay. And listen, if you've got any questions, please send them to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you feel okay?
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is probably going to be controversial, but this is probably going to get a lot of views.
Yeah.
Let
me just turn you up a bit.
Okay. Can you put the link to my transition fund in the video?
Here's the problem. If I do that, I'll be a hypocrite because I don't believe that you should be doing this, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
But you've mentioned it.
Are you going to monetize the video?
Pardon?
Are you going to monetize the video?
I don't know. I don't know.
I would prefer it to not be monetized.
Fine. If you don't want it to be monetized, I won't monetize it.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's fair. Yeah. And I see you have ads in the beginning of your videos. I would appreciate it if there's no ads on there.
Oh, come on. Now you're dictating everything for
But because look, you're getting, this is a controversial topic. Yes, it's going to get a lot of views, I'm sure. And if you can't, if I can't get a benefit, it's only fair. It's only fair that
you're getting benefit. Yeah, you have a long conversation, which I'm sure you've been edified.
Yeah,
and I've been okay. edified as well. I've learned a lot from you. I've learned a lot from your experiences. It's not about money, believe me. We're not making big money out here. If I was, okay. I'd own something.
You can do take the request how you do, but I would just request that there would be no ads.
So I'm not gonna put ads on this because of that request that you've put. I'm not gonna put Google ads on my, but I might
Google. I'm talking about promoting a brand. You do what you want. I'm just telling you my request.
Say again, promoting a brand.
Yeah, like because I know you promote a lot of brands in the beginning.
No, I only promote like one brand, but I won't do it. For you, okay.
You are a free man. You do what you want.
No, that's cool. You don't want me to promote it. It's usually Nature's Blend. Is a company called Nature's Blend. It's like,
yeah, something like that.
Yeah. It's like honey and they sell good stuff. Yeah,
I would appreciate it if you wouldn't.
All right, no problem.
Thank you so much. You were incredibly polite. This was a very, I'm not going to lie. I was, when you said you considered me a man, I'm like, why am I here? But I do want to applaud you for, while simultaneously holding these beliefs that it is haram, but also respecting me. I do appreciate that. And I hope this conversation can start another conversation with all of your subscribers and all of the people who listen to your podcast.
It's an open door policy with us. And obviously we're here to try and answer questions and be respectful. We're not here to try and drive the people away. And look, anyone who wants to be submissive to God has already got my vote, and you're identifying as a Muslim, and I'm not going to drive you away from this or the Quran or Sunnah or call you a kafir or any of those things that make you upset. I'm just here to try and give you the advice that I think you need. Mm-hmm. And you know,
but just think I was just very like, you say that what the doctor says is right, and the doctor says that transitioning is beneficial. So I want you to
I'm not talking about the doctor's ideological position. I'm just talking about the field of medicine, right? So when you go to when you feel sick in the field of medicine,
the entire field of medicine, it's very
medicine doesn't have ideological position. Medicine is a scientific sub-branch, right?
Right, like there's the medical condition, gender dysphoria, and the cure is to transition.
Well, it's more psychological, right? And as we said, psychology has been influenced by ideology. So if you look at the DSM, the DSM is a very interesting psychological manual. Mm-hmm. And if my memory serves me correctly, I think in the 40s or 50s or whatever it was, they actually had homosexuality as a disease there. But then in the 60s and 70s, it became, legislators had homophobia as a problem. So clearly it's being guided by ideological standpoints.
But
science can be ideological. Like for eugenics is the best example. Eugenics is literally a racist program, right? And it was a program that was used in Nazi Germany to try and prove that certain races are better than other races. So
right,
and yeah, there, scientific. It's not always true.
There's two sides to the coin.
Science ideological.
Yeah, I just want the last thing that I wanted to leave off on is that we're not all delusional. Science at the time. Science supports us and has been supporting us. I just want to leave it off on that note.
Look, I think that's a bit of a far-fetched one, because science is not meant to support ideological positions. Science is meant to be an enterprise which works absent of any ideology. You can have scientists that support you, but scientists, when they do support you, they will be using their ideological judgment, not their scientific judgment, because science is neutral. It doesn't have ideology in it. It doesn't have
science. Do you agree that science says when you get a cold, you should treat yourself?
No, it doesn't say that. It doesn't say what you ought to do. It just says
what's recommended.
Describing what is the case, not what ought to be the case.
So like when there's an illness and there is a, what's it called, cure to that, do you think that that is not factual?
No, look, illnesses have cures, but it's not always the case that you should, like saying that you should take a vaccination, is an ideological position. So now I've become ideological. When I say that, you should take it. When I say should, ought, now I'm putting morality into the equation.
So taking vaccines is now an ideological position.
Yes. And not taking them is also an ideological position.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, any questions, keep them rolling. I'm ready for any questions. And sorry if I came across as, you know, imposing or ask you any questions that you felt uncomfortable with.
No, that was you're not fine. My... You're fine.
Yeah, and this is the 10th episode of the MH podcast.
Okay, you're going to plug my social medias though, right?
I don't plug anybody's social media.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. I'll accept it. Also, I'm like, what's it called? I don't know if what you're gonna, but like, I've been, you're not gonna include like the trans hijabi in it, right?
Pardon?
You're not gonna include my user in it, right?
He just said it.
No, I just wanna make sure because I'm gonna be changing it soon. So I'm like, if you are going to,
okay. I'll tell you. I'm sure people know who you are. I'm sure people who try and find you or something like this.
Yeah.
But look, okay. As I say, I'm not in the business of, you know, if I did it with you, it'd have to do with everyone. And then it would just
just asking.
Yeah, no worries. But once again, it was a pleasure to have you on. And hopefully
thank you.
There's something that you got from this.
Okay, and hopefully there's something that you got
from me. From that. Of course.
Okay.
All right. And that was the 10th episode of the MH podcast. Yes, we bring in interesting and vibrant guests every week, as we had here today. Very interesting and very unique experiences, which actually is becoming more prevalent in societies, and the Muslim community should know how to speak to people who are trans so they don't feel, as hopefully we've done today, pressured, but at the same time that they have the information that they need to be able to make their decisions. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.